Accession number 27185, reel 29.
Major Barras, reel 29. I think you're saying that there are lots of Germans and horses roaming around in the forest.
Yeah, well, the horses all came out of the forest. I can remember they walked around all over the fields around this side. And I remember when we'd been there some time, a few local sort of grateful farmers came and rounded up one or two of the horses and took them off. Obviously weren't theirs, but why not?
Why not?
The opportunity. C'est la guerre.
Did you manage to get yourself mounted?
No, I didn't. I believe one or two did, actually. The thing I remember about it was not just... first of all, the soldiers, they were absolutely finished. They were disarrayed. They were slovenly. They got to the stage where their morale had gone. Some were wearing greatcoats, some were wearing helmets, soft caps, some were bareheaded. And they were just sitting around in groups. And, the usual thing was to sort of put their hand across their face like that and say, if you talk to them, they say, alles kaputt. That was a favourite expression they came out with. And they were always grateful for a cigarette or two. I mean, our chaps were never vindictive. I never saw any vindictiveness or bad handling of prisoners.
What did you actually do with them then, this great mass of men? And
oh, well, somebody else came up and took them away, I think. Yeah, we couldn't possibly handle them ourselves. No. We had to wait here for somebody to take us across the river. Of course, by this time, the Americans and the French were in Paris.
Yes.
The 7th, the guards armoured were pretty near Brussels by now. Mm. And the 11th Armoured very near Antwerp.
Yeah.
I mean, they'd done, 250 miles in 6 days. Mm-hmm. And they'd already crossed. Now, it was easier for everybody else to cross because they were upriver, where the river was much narrower. Mm-hmm. Where we were, it was very wide. So we had to wait. And eventually... Sorry, you were about to ask me.
I was going to ask, when you did the attack, you said there were a few... Some small arms fire came back at you.
Mm.
Did the Germans in the wood keep firing until you assaulted, or did they stop and put their hands up before?
Oh, it just disappeared into the wood.
They just legged it into
the wood. I don't think it was, yeah. You see, the reason why they were put there, obviously, was because some of their mates were still crossing the river behind.
Oh. And they were getting away.
And they were getting away, and they were being left to sort of ward us off.
It was just a rear guard.
After a bit, they didn't think there was much in it for them, so they gave up. They were going to be taken prisoner anyway, so sooner the better, I suppose.
In all the equipment and stores and so forth in the forêt de Breton that you found, was there anything that you could make use of?
No. No, absolutely nothing. I did... there were occasions when we took on German vehicles. I mean, I remember in my company, for instance, we'd picked up... Not only did we pick up a... motorcycle and sidecar, which we picked up soon after arriving, after we'd gone through Bayeux. But I picked up couple of others, which were being driven by people in the company we used. But after a bit, I think the CEO said, look, you better get rid of them, otherwise you're going to be attacked. So they didn't want to have typhoons attacking us, so it was a thing to do. But one of them had silver in it, which obviously the Germans have pinched from some unfortunate Frenchman's house, and had a lot of silver which you could use for food. So on one particular occasion we used it just for a joke.
You're eating your bullion biscuit off silver plate.
Yes. So anyway, just to finish this off, we waited there, and then we got by... I think the Royal Engineers had were moving people across in little salt boats and things with engines.
Was there any opposition or trouble?
No, nothing at all by then. They'd all gone. And as I say, I can't remember which corps it was that the armoured divisions were in, but they'd all gone. They were miles ahead. They crossed over the river further down and they up into Belgium. So we had to wait, and then... eventually we crossed. And that was, to us, that was the end of the Normandy campaign.
What happened then when you got onto the north side of the Seine? What were you pushed on immediately?
Well, our next job was to take and invest and capture Le Havre.
So that's another element at the end of the campaign in Normandy. So you'd be moved sideways there, wouldn't you?
Yes, yes.
Moving westwards.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. That didn't come, the actual movement into Le Havre didn't come until the middle of September, as far as I remember. Can I just look at my notes here a minute and see if...
Were there any other aspects of the campaign in Normandy?
Well, there are certain things which you may find interesting. For instance, the RAF had airstrips which they put down behind us, you know, the metal airstrips.
Yeah.
And we used to see them unrolling them across the field and operating, and they were only about half a mile behind us. I've mentioned mobile bath units sometimes. There was a brigade cinema as well, which people used to go back to whenever they could.
How often would that be?
Oh, it depended entirely on what we were doing. I mean, if we were in defensive position, then it was possible to send a number of people from each platoon back to see a film.
How was the cinema set up? What did it consist of?
Oh, it would just be it depends where they were. If they could get a local hall, they'd probably use it. Whether a tent or not, I don't know, but it was quite a basic business.
What sort of films did they show?
Oh, any old thing they could get from England, I suppose. Charlie Chaplin or something. Anything to amuse people. Then there was the rest camps, which I didn't mention. After, I think it was about into August, a rest camp was organised where you could go back for 48 hours for 2 days. 48 hours is 2 days. And just do nothing. These were near the coast, and I remember my turn came round, and I can't remember when. I went back there, and you were just behind, you were not far from the gun lines, so it wasn't all peace all the time. But I was given a bell tent to myself, and I can remember sitting in there and completely forgetting the war altogether. It's an incredible thing. You come straight out, and what amazed me is coming out of the line. When you've been in the line, you just look ahead all the time. You don't know what's going on behind. When I came out and went down the road going to the camp, it was the mass of stuff everywhere. Lorries, tanks, signs saying, pointing to this, that and the other. And you never realised that all this stuff was piling up behind. And no wonder Monty wanted to get the bridgehead bigger so he could bring all the stuff in. But anyway, getting back to this camp, you did nothing for 48 hours. There was a sort of a marquee tent with food. There were certain hours for food. You could go and have a drink and chat. You wore anything you liked. I wrote a couple of letters. I don't think I did anything else.
Who actually ran the rest camp? Was it the regional or corps?
Oh, no, it was higher than that. It was the army group thing, I think, yes. I think it was Monty's idea. Yeah. And I think it was very good because I went back completely refreshed after that. Yeah. There's one incident I happen to remember. There's of course, the V1s had already started bombarding London. I think it was about the 11th of June or something they started. And whilst I was there one night, I heard this puttering in the sky. And heard this was a V1 coming over. It came from the German side. And it went out, and as it went over us, it got hell from our ack. It went over the shipping outside, and there was a tracer and stuff and ack going up, and still it went puttering on. And then it decided that it didn't like the whole thing at all and wanted to go home, so it turned around, came back, got the same pasting from the ships, from us, and then went over in no man's land where there was complete silence. And then went over the Germans, who gave it the biggest pasting of all, because they'd been told, you know, this was a devastating weapon, so they were rather anxious to pull it down. But it just went on puttering into the middle distance somewhere. I just hope it would got to as far as Hitler's headquarters, but it never did.
You never heard it landing then?
No. It was just a rogue.
You're saying that the RAF often had airstrips quite close behind.
Yes.
Did you have anything to do with them personally? Have any personal contact with
No, I didn't, but I was just coming on to the fact that there were little units called ASU, Air Support Signals Units.
Yes.
Which probably consisted only of a truck with a radio officer and two radio operators. And they used to be farmed out. I don't know whether they got much below division, I wouldn't have thought, unless on special circumstances brigade. And they had, of course, direct communication with the RAF control somewhere. So that if you wanted assistance or help, you could get it quickly. But of course there were these, what they called cab ranks up there, which used to float around all the time.
Did you ever have support from one of those?
Oh yes, we frequently got them in front of us. It wasn't that we called it.
Oh.
It was merely that somebody higher up, before setting an operation, had merely put it as part of the big plan that the RAF would go and paste.
Be preconcerted.
Yes, that's right. But there was a a plan where the artillery put down red smoke. Mm. You probably heard about that. They fire red smoke onto the target for the RAF to identify, which was not a very pleasant thing if you were there, because as soon as you saw red smoke coming around, you knew what was coming next.
You were saying that there was one attack where you did have typhoons.
Yes.
Behind the wood.
Yes.
You were attacking. Do you know how that support was coordinated?
I don't think it was coordinated by us at all. It was merely put in the plan.
Yes.
And as it was known before we launched onto Launay Ridge by the higher-ups, that they got information either from, well, probably from air reconnaissance, I should think, that there was a concentration of armour down there. And they realised that once we got onto the ridge, this was going to be used for counterattack.
So they
decided to try and neutralise it before they could even get into the game.
Now, also, you mentioned on one occasion you had a forward observation officer with you, the FOO. Was that the only occasion on which the FOO was actually up with your company headquarters, or were there other occasions?
Oh, there were other occasions when it was convenient for them to be located in my company area, not because they were giving necessarily support just to my company, but the whole battalion, but because it happened to be the best place for them to be.
Right. Where would they be normally? Would they be at Battalion HQ or?
Oh no, they'd be out in front somewhere
somewhere.
Yeah, because they were. Well, sometimes they came back with O groups to the battalion with us, but normally they would be up in front, or sometimes they were back with the battalion. Of course, it depends entirely on the circumstances.
Another thing that occurs to me is that you've been discussing a succession of attacks that you made.
Yeah.
You haven't mentioned ever running across mines. I was wondering how you've coordinated engineer support if you needed it.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of mines. There were these S mines around, which sprang out of the ground and spread mayhem all around them. We did have one or two people killed on mines, I know. And the other thing, of course, they used to put mines on the verges of the road.
Yes.
So that when you pulled off on the truck, you got blown up. I mentioned earlier one of my carrier was blown up on a mine with young Private Jin in it who got killed.
That's right.
They were always about.
In the attacks you were mentioning later on.
No, I don't remember.
Germain and so forth, you don't.
No.
Seem to run across.
No, them. I don't think they had time to lay them at that stage.
What about wire? Were they able to lay?
No,
substantial wire aprons or other entanglements?
Don't remember. it was. I mean, once we got through the off the beaches and into the hinterland, I don't think they had the opportunity to do it, because it meant being in the open. I suppose they could have done it at night. But anybody who got it, unfortunately, the Germans, if they got in the open, were probably knocked off by the. If they stayed out there too long, they probably stood a good chance of being knocked off by our power. But I don't remember any wire or mines. I mean, you have to be pretty static to be able to put all that stuff down, really. I don't know. I know, as I say, we came across mines on the verge of the road with trucks being blown up and that sort of thing. There was an occasion somewhere where we went through an orchard and these S-mines were active.
Was that at Verrières or near Verrières?
Well, it could have been. It could have been. It was earlier.
Yes.
I just have this sort of niggle in the back of my mind that I know this happened somewhere, sometime. But if we wanted the mine, mind you, our own assault pioneers were trained in lifting mines.
Yes.
So if it was a central, if there were mines around, for instance, if Britannia Corsa sighted itself somewhere and discovered that there were got mines on the road outside, they'd have got the assault pioneers to lift them if there were just a few there. I think if there'd been a big mine field or such, the engineers would have been called up from division. But there were no minefields. They never had a chance to lay them, really.
How about you? Were you able to use mines or wire at all when you were getting into defensive positions?
No, we didn't. Never at all. We were never there long enough, really.
We're simply digging in, sighting all weapons, and then...
Yes, that's it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So just thinking, there was an occasion when I was having a kip under a tree in a warm day, and we thought the enemy were like way away somewhere. This was during the breakout, I think. We were resting somewhere, and I'd gone to sleep on this blanket, and I was awoken by an almighty great crash, and a SP gun on the other hill, the other side, had suddenly arrived, shot a shell over, which had burst in the tree above me. And when I looked at my blanket, it was full of holes. It was rather like sort of a Tom and Jerry film, you know, where you see a sort of outline of someone sitting there. Nothing happened at all. How I got missed, I don't know.
Another piece of good luck.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And it was just out of the blue of that chap appearing, because nothing had happened all day. And as far as I know, nothing further happened. He was just sort of... doing a bit of work on the side, I think. I don't think freelance.
A roving gun or a loving gun.
Yeah, well, freelance, yes. Yes, a roving gun. One other thing I'm reminded of, I'm talking as my driver, Private Wright, I remember. Mm. When I went back to battalion headquarters for O groups, he very often used to drive me back if it was somewhere away. And then he'd totter off down to the RAP for a mug of char and a chat with CO and everybody else. And on occasion he went in there, he thought he'd have a bit of fun. So he said, "I've been shot in the arse." And they all said, "Oh, poor, come on, then, lie down here, let me look after you, old chap." Blamed, "Ah, it's only a joke, you see." So, joke over, have a cup of mug of char. Sometime later he came up with an O group and he sat on his rifle at the bottom. No, true, this is true. He got a boot in the bottom. He rushed off down to the RAP, holding his bottom with one hand with blood pouring. They all looked at him and said, "Yeah, ha, ha. Don't come there with that one, mate." And as soon as he held his hand up and saw his blood, his hand was dripping with blood, it had happened.
How had he managed to fire his rifle while sitting on it?
I don't know. But that is
an ordinary thing to be able
to. I know. Well, it must have been cocked and he must have had a bullet out. I don't know. He shouldn't have done. Mm. But it was in orders. I saw it in orders. Self-inflicted. Well, not self-inflicted, but I can't remember how they worded it.
Negligent?
No, it wasn't negligent. They said it was... No, they didn't say whether he should or shouldn't have done it. It was merely just a part two order saying why he'd been evacuated.
All right.
And I can't remember how they worded it. But it did say he got a bullet in the bum.
Did he come back?
I don't remember. He probably did. A lot of them never came back. I got letters from lots of chaps who, when they'd gone away, say, I want to come back, you know, when I'm ready and well again. I never saw any of them. They must have gone off in other units if they ever came across back
got,
home
got
again.
Cross-posted, presumably.
Yeah, they went to units where we could have had them and we'd... But it's very difficult in war to get them all going in the right channels at the right time. I got a note here about battle fatigue, but we've dealt with it, haven't we? The other thing is I found myself as chairman, president of a court, field court-martial.
Was that in Normandy?
This was in Normandy,
what
yes.
Was that about?
Well, we had a couple of absentees. I can't remember what the charge was. I don't think they were charged with being running away in the face of the enemy.
Were these absentees from the battalion?
Yes, they just weren't there. Now, as a president of a field court martial, I could give up to 7 years penal servitude. Mm. And you have to remember, I was just 25 at that time.
Do you know why you'd been chosen for the...
No, it's just my turn.
It's your turn to be the president of the field
yes.
court martial.
Yes, I think...
Held within the battalion...
Well, it wasn't in the battalion, it was another battalion, obviously.
Oh, right.
I mean, this court-martial was set up by divisional headquarters, I would think. Because they got these two guys, and they were under close arrest. Mm. They were a totally different unit.
Ah. Who else was on the court-martial board?
Well, there had been two other captains. Whether I had somebody from the Adjutant General's department for advice, I can't remember.
Do you remember what the evidence was? What these two?
I know they were. They left their battalions when they'd been ordered for action.
So absent without leave.
Well, it's more. No. It was much more serious than that.
Desertion in the face of the enemy.
Well, it could have been. Yes. Mm. Yes, it would have been.
Or,
well, I know I was entitled. Well, not entitled, but I mean the. The president of a court-martial at that stage could give, under war conditions, up to 7 years penal servitude. Mm. I can't remember very much else except that I know that one of them, we in fact gave 7 years penal servitude for various reasons. The other one had, there were certain factors which were in his favour.
Do you remember what the factors
no,
were?
No, I don't, not now. And I decided to let him off more lightly. Mm. And I remember afterwards a brigadier who wasn't Brigadier Pepper then, he was another brigadier. I was standing somewhere and he came up and said, I've got your findings, the courts martial, call your court martial. He said, why did you give the... Because normally, when a court martial proceedings goes up, informal chat shouldn't take place, really.
No.
But he, on the side, talking out of the corner of his mouth almost, he said, why did you give this other one lesser punishment? I can't remember what I said, but I told him. Mm. And all he said was, oh yes, I see, and walked away.
But were the findings confirmed?
I think so, yes, as far as I know. I wasn't questioned again about it. If they hadn't been confirmed, then I would have been asked to come up and... been a court of inquiry of some sort, I expect.
How long did this process take, the court-martial?
Oh, only a day. Mm. I mean, they're very quick. You only got one or two witnesses. It's not as if it was a sort of murder crime in peacetime where you're sort of looking around for all kinds of witnesses everywhere. You just have to be satisfied that this was what happened. I mean, you've either got to prove that he was there or he wasn't there, and...
Were they defended?
Oh, probably, I should think. Yeah, it must have been. I mean, it's their right to have a defence. Mm. But that is literally all I can remember of it. But it's astonishing to think now that at 25 I had that sort of power, isn't it?
7 years.
I know. It frightens me now. Mm. Then, everybody, we just took it in our stride. Mm.
How long did you take over your deliberations then, you and your two?
Oh, I just don't know. I can't remember. I mean, I don't think there was much to deliberate about. I mean, once the fact had been proved that he wasn't there when ordered to be there, unless he came up with something to say that he was already dead and couldn't get there, or else he was very ill and somebody in the field hospital had said, oh yes, he was taken ill and was there. Mm. But there was nothing like that came up. I mean, he couldn't explain. Nobody, there were no witnesses to explain.
Do you happen to remember where they'd been caught or picked
no,
up?
No, I don't. No, I don't. I don't. They may have been picked up by the CMP in the back area somewhere. They may have been even picked up by their own people further back in B echelon or so. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they went or what they did. But obviously there were two different cases.
Oh, so you dealt with two cases in one day. They weren't dealt with together.
No, they were separate. Mm.
And they weren't from...
They were both from different units, too, as far as I'm...
Not from the same brigade.
I don't know which brigade they were, whether they... They weren't from our brigade, no. Mm. I mean, that's the whole idea of a court-martial, that you have to be completely...
Divorced from it.
Yeah, completely neutral and have no knowledge of, or as far as possible, no knowledge of their circumstances. Because if it had been from another battalion in the brigade, we might well have known what was going on.
Yes.
It may not have been relevant, but it might be seen to be irrelevant.
But presumably they would have been from the same division.
Oh, probably, yes. Mm. Oh, yes.
So it's divisional headquarters.
Yes. That's right, yes. I think they were somewhere from the division. Mm. Must have been. The other thing which I've got a note down here about Slidex codes.
Oh. Was that in common use?
This is what we used in the front line.
Yes.
It was a square card with letters, was gridded with squares. Each square had a number on the left and letters along the top, or vice versa, I can't remember which. And each day, the setting would come out from battalion headquarters to tell us how to set it. So when you got a message with 2A, you looked on the grid and you saw either a letter itself, which make up a word, or else a phrase which was, or a word which was much used.
Common usage.
Like enemy, artillery, T, you know, anything in there which mines, and a letter, and then you had to decode it. And I can remember so well standing there with this thing, either trying to encode a message on a signal pad, in my helmet, water dripping off my helmet onto this card, in the pouring rain. Difficult.
Practical system, or did you?
Oh no, it was it was perfectly practical. Yeah. And then you could send it over the wireless, you see, over the radio. Or if we had the line sent out, we would in defence. Field telephones were reeled out, and very often the radios, wireless was turned off.
Oh. Did you prefer line to radio for communication?
Oh yeah, much easier. It's the only one where you turn the handle, you know, to ring the bell the other end.
Yes.
Oh no, it was much easier. It was clearer. You didn't have to be so guarded with your language.
Mm.
And also, very often, you've got interference on the radio, and only one person could speak at a... Well, you can only... One person could speak at a time on the telephone, but...
Yes. But if you have many stations on the net...
You have, well, have them on the net at the same time, yeah.
Mm. With the radio, it can make it very difficult.
Yes, but that's controlled by a control, of course.
Yes.
But, no, that's it, really. I just thought you might be interested to know how the coding was done. The other theme note I have here is that we were relieved by the Polish Armoured Division on one occasion. I can't remember where it was, but we were told they were coming up to relieve us. And it was an occasion when it was pouring of rain. I hit in my hole with a tarpaulin.